Jim couldn't be more right. My sole desire in standing up in here is that we might all be led in a better path, that we might all draw closer to the Lord, that we might each be more in tune with what the Lord's will for each one of us is in our lives. And that's really what this is all about when we gather together here. It's not to entertain or put on a performance, but rather to seek the Lord's will. I'd like to read, to begin with, a passage that's very familiar to each one of us in the 7th chapter of Isaiah, and one that we always hear around Christmas time because it's a prophecy of Christ's birth. Isaiah chapter 7, verse 13. If at all possible, I would ask you, if you have your books, to follow along. I think it helps for these words to sink in better if we can actually look at them as they go by. Isaiah chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. And he said, "Hear ye now, O house of David. Is it a small thing for you to weary men? But will ye weary my God also? Therefore, the Lord himself shall give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Butter and honey shall he eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good." And this last verse is what I would like to discuss today. Refusing the evil and choosing the good. Each day we are faced with choices. Everything we do is a choice. Will I do this? Will I do this? Will I think this? Will I think that? Jesus was faced with choices. And I think it's very worthwhile to begin by looking at what some of those choices were and how he dealt with them. So let's turn to the 4th chapter of Matthew. This is directly after Christ was baptized. And Satan realized that he had a lot of work to do. He realized that the only power in heaven and on earth that could overcome his evil was now available to man. That the Son of God was incarnate upon the earth. That he was communicating with the very people that Satan wanted to deceive. And he was giving them the very tools that they need to overcome Satan and be victorious over death, eternal death. And so he began with Christ himself. Chapter 4 of Matthew. "Then Jesus was led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward and hungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, 'If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread.'" And with each of these temptations, let's pay attention to what Christ's response was. "But he answered and said, 'It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God.' Then the devil taketh him up into the holy city and setteth him on a pinnacle of the temple and said unto him, 'If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee. And in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone.' Jesus said unto him, 'It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God.' And again the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, and saith unto him, 'All these things will I give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me.' Then saith Jesus unto him, 'Get thee hence, Satan, For it is written, Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. Then the devil leaveth him, and behold, angels came and ministered unto him. So let's look at the things that Satan offered to Jesus to tempt him with. The first, he offered him food. He was hungry, and he offered him food if he would worship him. In ways, this is symbolic of our daily needs, the things that we need to survive from one day to the next, the physical things of our lives, food, shelter, clothing. But a couple of chapters over, in chapter 6 of Matthew, let's see how Christ discussed this on the Sermon on the Mount. Chapter 6, verse 11. And in his great prayer, the great example that we have given us and how to pray, one of the things is, give us this day our daily bread. We put ourselves in the Lord's hand for our daily needs. We don't give ourselves over to the world and to Satan to receive our daily needs. Verse 25 said, Therefore I say unto you, take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life more than meat, and the body more than raiment? Then he says down in 34, But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Take therefore no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. If our heart is on the Lord, he will provide the way for us to have our daily needs filled. So Christ resisted that temptation. The second thing that Satan offered him was protection from harm. He said, jump off of this tall building, because it says that the angels will protect you, will lift you up. But let's go and look at Psalm 91, where this comes from. And let's see how Satan was taking the scriptures and twisting them around to fit his own needs and his own desires, hoping that he might be able to trick Christ with God's own words. Psalm 91. He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in him will I trust. Now what was it that Satan wanted him to do in order to be protected? Devil taketh him up into the holy city, saith unto him, If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. He's saying, do what I'm asking you to do, to prove to me. Christ didn't have to prove anything to Satan. Satan was quoting from God's own words. Let's jump down to verse 10 here of Psalm 91. There shall no evil befall thee, neither shall any plague come nigh to thy dwelling, for he shall give his angels charge over thee, to keep thee in all thy ways. They shall bear thee up in their hands, lest thou dash thy foot against a stone. Thou shalt tread upon the lion and adder, the young lion and the dragon shalt thou trample under feet. Because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high because he hath known my name. He shall call upon me and I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation. It's predicated on trusting in the Lord. If you trust in the Lord, you don't have to prove it to Satan. The third thing that Satan offered him was power and glory and to be revered and admired by men. But again, what did Christ say in the Sermon on the Mount? Matthew 6:2. When thou doest thine alms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. If Christ wanted glory of men, he could have done it. It would have been easy. But that wasn't his purpose. And he was not about to fall to this temptation. He offered him really everything of the world, all the material things. This is one of the things he tempts us with, is material things. Matthew 6:19 says, lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. These are symbolic. These temptations that Christ received are symbolic of the temptations that we're faced with every day. And these things can color our decisions, the choices that we make. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about refuse the evil and choose the good.
Number 312.
Had to deal with. It's both a blessing and a curse. We are the only creatures on the face of the earth that have the ability to make rational decisions, to act on the data that we have. And God gave us that free will for a reason, because he wanted us to choose him and reject Satan. He wants us to refuse the evil and choose the good. So I'd like to talk a little bit about choices today. Here's the easy question. The first one's always easy. Is it important what we choose? See? Oh, no. See? Yes. Of course it's important what we choose. In Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, it pronounces a curse. Very simple, easy to understand. Isaiah 5, verse 20 says, woe unto them, a curse be on those, if you wish, that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. In our everyday process of making choices, we choose between the good and the evil. And if we choose to take something that's good and reject it and call it evil, then there's a curse pronounced on us. And likewise, if we take something that is evil, that's contrary to God's will, and we say this is a good thing, then there's a curse pronounced on us. Some simple examples. And these are sort of practical things. But practical things frequently end up with a spiritual basis. I choose not to pay the gas bill. I'm just not going to pay it. Those people have all the money in the world. They don't need my money. It's a rip-off. I'm just not going to pay it. Okay, fine. Don't pay it. It's your choice. But your house is going to be cold. That's the logical consequence of not paying your gas bill. It's going to be cold in your house. I choose to stay in bed. I'm going to sleep in today. I'm not going to go to work. Well, the logical consequence is you're not going to have a job. And then you won't be able to pay the gas bill and your house is going to be cold. I can choose to pay attention in my schooling, in my education. I can get a good education. I can study hard. And the logical consequence is I'm going to have a better chance of getting a good job, supporting my family, and having the freedom to serve the Lord. Each one of us is faced with the choice of what we're going to wear. Now, some of us have to rely on our wives to kind of guide us in the right direction, make sure the tie matches the shirt and all of that. But we also have the choice to say, no, I'm going to wear the other tie, and that's that. You know, and I'd stand up here and look rather ridiculous. If I choose to dress in an inappropriate fashion, people are going to make conclusions about me. And that's something that we need to be very aware of. That's a logical consequence of the choices that we make. I could make the choice to use drugs and alcohol. It's a choice that's available to me. I can do that if I like. Consequence is, it's going to ruin my health. It's going to make a disaster out of my life. If I'm married, it's going to ruin my family. It's going to give the wrong ideas and impressions and example to my children. So the consequences of making that choice. I can choose to treat my friends and my family with love and respect. The respect that's due them. This morning in Sunday school, we were talking about a Christ-like relationship is submitting yourselves one to the other in the fear of the Lord. I can choose to do this. And I'm going to have a whole lot more joy in my life because of that choice. I can choose to honor the Lord and follow His commandments and devote my life to Christ. I'm going to have a better life, but I'm also going to have a better eternal life, salvation. They're choices. Are they important? Absolutely. Every choice we make has some level of importance to it. And we need to be aware of that. Because this is a gift that the Lord gave us. And expects us to use it responsibly. Are we born with the ability to make good choices? Does a baby know instinctively that he touches the stove, he's going to burn his hand? No. That's something he has to learn. We're dealing with a twofold responsibility. We're dealing with, on the one hand, the responsibility of the individual to learn to make good choices. As parents, we have the responsibility to teach our children the logical consequences of our actions. Children must be taught. Interestingly enough, the psychologists and scientists have made an interesting discovery. And that is that the portion of the brain that controls choice making and being able to look into the future and see what the future consequence is of a present action, that part of the brain is still developing up into the teens and early 20s. And sometimes we never fully develop that ability. Sometimes we just don't have the ability to understand all the consequences of our actions. There's a theory called the law of unintended consequences. And that is that for a given choice, there could very well be consequences that were unforeseen, that we didn't realize that was going to happen. For example, one that is very important in the world today is the use of antibiotics. Antibiotics are wonderful things. And there are certain sicknesses that we get, and without the antibiotic, it's just not going to go away. And so the discovery of antibiotics is a wonderful thing. There's an unintended consequence of the use of antibiotics, and that is that strains of diseases develop that are resistant to the antibiotics. And so by using this wonderful tool, we can end up actually in the long run making matters worse. If we look at the immediate consequence, I'm going to receive relief from whatever this sickness is. The unintended consequence down the way is I'm making it more difficult for people in the future to overcome this same disease. There are several things that affect this law of unintended consequences. One is just ignorance of the situation, not being aware. For instance, the antibiotic situation. We just didn't realize that was going to happen. As a young person, maybe there are things that go on in the world that you just don't know about. You don't realize. I spoke a minute ago about if I choose to dress in an inappropriate fashion, people will make conclusions about me that aren't true. We like to dress in the current fashion. Whatever is in, whatever is cool, we like to dress that way. And if I choose one of the current modes of dress, one of the, sloppier modes of dress, and I go in to get a job. I apply for this job, and I've got my education, I've got everything else lined up. I'm good to go on this job, and I walk in and I look really, really sloppy. I'm not going to get the kind of response out of that interviewer that I want. Because he's going to look at me and he's going to say, well, he's probably sloppy in everything he does. And I need somebody who's going to make, that's going to do this job very carefully and do it properly, and maybe this person isn't the right person for the job. It was an unintended kind of, all I was doing was dressing according to the current fashion. But I didn't see the consequence of that action. We discuss frequently also how young ladies dress. And they're probably more fashion conscious and oriented than we are. We wear, the same old coat and tie all the time. But there are certain modes of fashionable dress that can give people the wrong idea. If the fashionable dress is, shall we say, on the skimpy side, there are going to be men who look at that and are going to get the wrong idea. My desire was just to dress fashionably. But the unintended consequence is that I might be receiving advances from men that are inappropriate and undesired. Another reason that the law of unintended consequences kicks in is because we're more interested in immediate gratification. I want this thing, and I want it right now, and I convinced myself that I deserve it. And so, I'm going to go buy it, whether I have the money or not. And, you know, the world is more than happy to extend us all kinds of credit. Number one reason for arguments in families is cash. The lack of it. What are we going to do? We got all this credit card debt. Well, you need to go get a job. You need to get two jobs. You need, and what have we got? We've got an argument going here, brewing big time. Because we didn't look down the future and say, okay, what's the consequence of spending money I don't have? I'm looking at the immediate. I've got whatever the thing is. I'm not looking at the future. Sooner or later, I gotta pay for that thing. I have a personal testimony about unintended consequences. In preparing for my sermon, I was just about finished with it last night, and I thought, well, I'll finish it up tomorrow. I'll get it all good to go, and everything will be just fine. And I had two options. One was, I'll get up early, and I'll finish it before I leave the house. But I also had this other thought. Well, now, let's see. Carrie is kind of teaching my Sunday school class right now. She's got a little course of study she's working with, and I'm just kind of sitting and following along. I could duck out of Sunday school, and I'll finish up my sermon right before the service. That'll work. Well, I woke up earlier this morning than the alarm clock was set for, so I said, well, all right, I'll get up, finish my sermon. And I was most of the way finished, and the telephone rang, and it was Carrie. And Carrie said, you're going to have to take the class this morning because Curtis is sick and I'm going to stay home with him. Unintended consequence would be, I wouldn't be prepared. I would have fallen down on my responsibility to you and to the Lord to be prepared. Couldn't have come at a better time. Thought, wow, there you go. I've got a personal testimony of my own unintended consequence. Refuse the evil and choose the good. Refuse the evil and choose the good. So, gets right down to it. How are we going to go about doing that? How are we going to do that? With little children, we pretty much have to make all their decisions for them. And as they get older, hopefully we help them to understand how to choose the good and refuse the evil. But ultimately, we've got to take personal responsibility for everything we do. We can't pawn it off on anybody. We can't make excuses. We've got to live up to our personal choices. So we'd better be prepared. We'd better have a plan. How am I going to do this? What kind of yardstick am I going to use for making my choices? Moroni chapter 7 has a really succinct answer to this question. Moroni 7, starting in verse 11 on page 764 of your Book of Mormon. Moroni chapter 7, verse 11. But behold, that which is of God inviteth and enticeth to do good continually. Now, isn't that really what making the choices is all about? Is doing the right thing, doing good. When we set out on our day, we've got a ton of choices to make. And those choices, for the most part, are relative to what our actions are going to be. So we have to have the right mental frame of mind to make those choices. Well, you don't just make them willy-nilly and hope for the best. So here is a framework. Here is a huge clue that those things that are of God, that are godly things, righteous things, the choices that are those that would refuse the evil and choose the good, are those things which actually invite us to do the right thing. Wherefore, everything which inviteth and enticeth to do good and to love God and to serve Him is inspired of God. He will give us the tool. And the way that we're going to be able to recognize that is this. For behold, my brethren, verse 12. Wherefore, take heed, my beloved brethren, that ye do not judge that which is evil to be of God, or that which is good and of God to be of the devil. That's what we read in Isaiah chapter 5. For behold, my brethren, it is given unto you to judge, that ye may know good from evil. Here's the clue. The way to judge is plain, that ye may know with a perfect knowledge as the daylight is from the dark night. For behold, the Spirit of Christ is given to every man, that they may know good from evil. Wherefore I show unto you the way to judge. For everything which inviteth to do good and to persuade to believe in Christ is sent forth by the power and gift of Christ. Wherefore ye may know with a perfect knowledge it is of God, but whatsoever thing persuadeth men to do evil and believe not in Christ and deny Him and serve not God, then ye may know with a perfect knowledge that it is of the devil. We have to be in tune with God's will if we're going to make these choices. Is the young child necessarily in tune with God's will? No. He needs to be taught by his parents. Is the teenager instinctively in tune with God's will? No. He has to learn from our examples. He has to learn from the limits that we set on his behavior. He has to learn from the words that we teach him that are God's words. Is Sunday school sufficient to accomplish this? Well, even as a Sunday school teacher, I'm going to tell you, no, I can't do it. 40 minutes a week does not do it. It requires daily reading and studying of the Word. It requires daily prayer. It requires daily, always and forever, providing that example of good works to your children. And that's not always easy. Sometimes maybe we want to fight and squabble with our spouse. Maybe we want to get into a big knockdown dragout. Do we do that in front of our children? Do we show them that the godly way to deal with things is to argue with the person that you supposedly love the most of anyone on the face of the planet? No. In Ephesians 5, we read this morning, submitting yourselves one to another. It means let's get together and in a loving way figure out how to deal with this situation. Rather than, no, you're going to do it my way. No, you're going to do it my way. Let's both get together and do it the Lord's way. We have that example of godly living that we must provide for our children so that they're taught on a daily basis to refuse the evil and choose the good. Sometimes they just flat don't want to do it. Kids, that's why every now and then we have to tell you, no, I can't allow you to do that. And you get all huffy and you go to your room and mope and grump around and everything. But please understand this. If we as parents didn't care, we'd say, sure, go get in the car, take a six pack, drive downtown Kansas City, hoop it up, have a good time, and I hope I get to see you again someday. But no, we can't do that. We have to say, no, that's not a good idea. I'm not going to allow you to do that. And try to explain the consequences. We don't, even as adults, we don't always want to understand the consequences. We'd rather do what we want to do. Refuse the evil and choose the good. Jesus was our example. Jesus is always our example. When he was tempted of the devil, he refused the evil and he chose the good. We need to be aware, all of us, not just the kids. We need to be aware of what's going on around us. We need to be informed. We need to spend time in prayer and contemplation so that we can hear that Spirit of the Lord when he tells us, this does not invite you to do good. We need to be introspective. We need to sit down and maybe even practice. All right? What are the unintended consequences of this action? If there's a person that I always get into an argument with, seems like every time we sit down before it's over, where everybody's hot. All right? Well, I'm going to analyze this situation. I'm going to see, all right, what's going on here? And I'll sit down in my easy chair and I'll mentally start a conversation with that person. I know this person well enough to know how they're going to respond to what I say. I know this person well enough to know what they're going to say. And I'm just going to mentally walk through a conversation. And I'm going to take it until it blows up. Then I'm going to say, okay, there's something that I can't say. Or there's a response I can't make to what that person says. Because every time it happens, this is the consequence. Everybody gets angry. All right, so rewind the tape. Try it again. Start that same conversation over again. See if I can't get it to go a little bit further before it blows up. Analyze what made it blow up, rewind the tape, and do it again. In my mind, try to get all the way through a conversation with that person so that when we walk away, everybody's smiling. Making choices. Choices of what we say to another person. We have to be willing to defer our gratification. We have to be willing to say, yeah, I'd really like that, but I can't afford it. Or, yeah, I'd really like to do that, but maybe that's not best for my family. Yeah, maybe I would just love to let this person have it. I mean, after all, what he's doing is wrong. And I need to go tell him, what you're doing is wrong, and it aggravates me. And that'll make me feel good because I've gotten that off my chest. Did it work? No. I need to delay that feeling of feeling good because I was right. And help guide that person so that they can refuse the evil and choose the good. We have to be willing to hear God's Spirit in our lives. We need to be in tune with Him so that when He speaks, we listen. In conclusion, I'd like to read Deuteronomy chapter 30. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy chapter 30. Verse 19. Moses is encouraging the people to accept the law that God has given him. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Choose those things which will bring you life and joy and peace. All those things that we refer to as the fruit of the Spirit. Therefore, choose life that both thou and thy seed may live. That thou mayest love the Lord thy God, that thou mayest obey His voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto Him, for He is thy life and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Let us each day choose to reject the evil and choose the good. God bless you each.